Okay, we'll bring the Mining and Outdoor Recreation Committee to order. I apologize for starting late again today, but the previous committee that was in here, I was running a little long, and then we had to get set up, so we're ready to roll now. We've got a big agenda ahead of us today. Representative Russo, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I will right now.
Representative Russo moved the minutes from yesterday. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Representative Russo. Representative Norris. The chair will move House File 2573 to bring the bill before us. The bill is going to be moved to taxes. House File 2573. Representative Norris, you have two bills.
Yes.
House File 2573 and House File 2574. As soon as we're done with the one, we'll do the other.
Okay.
So we'll start with 2573. Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. It's the first time I've been in front of this committee. So,
where's our treat?
What's that?
Treat?
Boy, it's an oversight.
Where's their pheasant?
If this goes well.
That would have been an easy one, Mr. Bench.
So House File 2573, we'll start there, has to do with obviously sales tax, and to actually describe it in detail and to make this as concise as possible, Les Bench is here. He is the owner of Viking Valley Hunt Club up in my county, Otter Tail County, and he can explain exactly what our intentions are today.
Very good. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, and I just want to state, we've got a lot to get through, so this bill has to go to taxes, and I think that's where the main issue lies anyway, so we'll keep it short here.
Good afternoon. Les Bench, representing myself as an owner of Viking Valley Hunt Club. Back in 2006, we feel there was a mistake that was made in the taxation in the essentially classifying game birds as purely an entertainment item, which they put a sales tax on. We disagreed with it at the time, and the commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Kathy Wicks, was pretty insistent that this remain. She called this a game release charge, which there is no such thing. We sell the agricultural product, pheasant, to our customers. They harvest it in different manners, and we clean it for them and give them it in a froze package to take home with them. And we're under the agricultural definition by the USDA and the state, and we feel that this was an improper taxation. We just want to clarify it in 297A61 to point out that this is an agricultural product, and it should be classified as such.
Questions from members? Anyone in the audience like to speak to this bill? Seeing none, the chair renews his motion that House File 2573 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion prevails. Bill is passed. On to taxes. Okay. Next, the chair will move House File 2574. Representative Mornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, again, deals with sales tax. Now we're talking clay pigeons, or they call them clay targets, I guess. They're not a bird. But
Mr. Bench.
There you go.
Okay, on this one, dealing with Jack Manson at the Department of Revenue, he thought that the targets should be taxed when they come in. This is a supply item that's used at a future point in the operation that is then fully taxed. So as a result, we had to go through 12 different steps to classify the labor associated with the target shooting and then break out the targets themselves. When you've got 12 stages, you've got 20 people standing at the cash register, it's an inconvenience and a major concern for the customers as far as what we're really doing. All we're saying is simplify it. Two entries, you punch in the basically the clays, the tax, and we're done. The net result is it's both, in both cases, it's the same. It's just an added additional steps that we had to take, so we proposed we combine this. Any targets sold out of the business are fully taxable, and the targets are fully taxable, so we would just combine the elements.
Questions from members? Representative Russo.
I'm just a little bit confused on the intent. You're saying that they would be fully taxable, but I'm saying they're exempt, so I'm not understanding that.
Mr. Benton.
Representing yourself. Two different items. Now, we're off the pheasants. We're on the targets.
Yeah.
Okay. The targets, when we cut, they come in, it's a supply item. We pay the distributor for that. We buy them by the truckload. They're the biodegradable targets. When we sell them to the customer, the targets and the shooting is included at one price with one taxation. The full taxation on it is passed on to the customer and paid by the customer. Did that answer your question?
Representative Russell?
Well, it's probably, thank you, Mr. Chair, maybe better answered in taxes. I'm just looking at the sold at retail part. But, I don't understand. What is it? How is it paid as part of an admission thing when you're selling them as retail? Line 1.12, sold at retail.
Yes, it is. It is. We get the targets in a wholesale supply. They're not taxed, but when we sell them to the customer as part of the range okay. activities, that's when they're fully taxed.
Thank you. That.
And I've got a breakdown if you would like to see it.
I'm good now. Thanks.
Anybody in the audience like to speak to the bill? All in favor of House File 2574 being re-referred to the Committee on Taxes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevail. The bill is
Thanks.
Passed. On
Thank
to tax.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Representative Nornes, can you add my name to both bills?
Okay.
Thank you. Co-author. Thank you very much. Is Representative Schumacher here? Representative Schumacher, I don't see him. Okay, so what's the next one? Okay. House File 3209, Representative Hackbarth. I will move House File 3209 to get the bill before us. It will be referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. With that, let's see. Who wants to start? Somebody from the DNR.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. I have with me Bob Welsh from our Division of Fish and Wildlife to help answer some technical questions.
Okay.
I thought, if you would allow me, Mr. Chair, to run through just a brief presentation, kind of talking about how we got to where we are today and some of the things you may or may not have been hearing. So, with
how long is the presentation?
As fast as I can go.
Okay.
So, with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to, this is some of the things that we've been presenting at the roundtable and also at our public house, open house last week. So you can see that what we're proposing to do via rule is considering restricting the use of lead shot on wildlife management public hunting areas in the farmland zone, which impacts about 1.3 million acres of WMAs. Well, actually, we have 1.3 million acres of wildlife management areas in Minnesota. This would impact 400,000 of them. This map shows that dark line coming down from the middle of Kitson County down through the central part of the state and over, which is the farmland zone. I believe that is the, it's not the rifle shotgun zone, never mind. I'm not going to go down there. So what we proposed doing initially back at last fall was under the state's Administrative Procedures Act, we're required to provide at least 60 days notice for public comment. We started our request for comments October 12, 2015, and we've been gathering comments ever since. Our next step, if we propose to do this, would be to publish a notice of intent to adopt a rule, which creates a formal rulemaking process with the administrative law judge and opens up another public comment period, and there would be hearings throughout the state. We've received numerous public comments. We've received almost 4,000 comments over the initial 60-day period. You can see 2,220 were supporting, 1,520 opposed. We had roughly 90 people attending our public meeting last week. I was not able to be there. I've been told it was roughly 50-50. Some of the most common comments we've heard from those supporting that it will protect birds and people. There's more than 100 bird species that have been poisoned. It simplifies regulations for small game hunting, whereby if you're hunting on a federal waterfall production area or in over water, you do need to have steel shot right now. You are not allowed to have lead on you, lead shot even in your pockets. Lead is toxic and should not be in the environment, and it protects wetlands, waterfowl habitat. Some of the most common comments we've seen from those opposed to the rule is that it's not scientifically proven it's needed. Non-toxic shot is not effective and will cause unnecessary wounding loss. Non-toxic shot is too expensive. Hunters will quit hunting or won't start hunting. And non-toxic shot will damage firearms. DNR's rationale for the proposal is that these wildlife management areas are purchased for wildlife production and public hunting and are managed for the long-term high-quality habitat and hunting. These are the legacy. These are the crown jewels within our hunting system within the state of Minnesota that are going to be there forever. One of our concerns is the deposition, continual deposition year in and year out of lead shot on these fields and areas that when our children's are there, what will those fields and WMAs look like with the continued deposition? On a trap field, all the clubs harvest the lead on some kind of period. So they go through and they collect the lead, they recycle it, reclaim it. We can't reclaim the lead off of these lands. So that's the legacy issue is another effect that's not on the slide, but that is a concern of us. The farmland WMA zones are less than 1.5% of the total land base in the state. As I mentioned, they receive high hunting pressure compared to surrounding lands. The South Dakota study that was done looking at lead ingestion by pheasants, heavily hunted areas at 6.5% ingested lead. Statewide, it was 1.34%. So continuing with the rationale for the proposal, these WMAs are in the farmland area, have a high concentration of wetlands. And then as we talked about, the shot deposited in WMA wetlands is still being ingested by waterfowl. Some lead is from small game hunters. 10 years after non-toxic for waterfowl, there was 11% reduction of mallards ingesting pellets, with one-third of those being lead, the study that we cite. And again, the good stewardship and management to maintain quality production for wildlife long-term, effective and available alternatives to lead exist, and it's consistent, as I mentioned, with the federal waterfowl production area rules. Just some brief facts about lead. Lead is toxic to all vertebrate species. Both acute and chronic effects can occur. Facts about game bird ingestion of lead. Various studies have shown, you can read this on yourselves, 8.9% of waterfowl had ingested lead. Estimated 1.6 to 2.4 million waterfowl died annually in a Fred and Franson study. Other game birds show ingestion rates ranging from 1.8 to 9.2%. Economic related facts. Most pheasant hunters use two or less shells, box of shells per year. The price difference that we've talked about is they're fairly comparable. The average hunter spends $1,500 a year. This is pennies in their pockets. Some other facts related to loss of hunters. South Dakota has a ban on lead shot on state land since 1998. Iowa currently has a ban on WMAs in 16 counties and select WMAs in 7 other counties. As I mentioned, the federal lands ban lead since 1999. And a survey that we did, 75% of small game hunters surveyed would adjust to ban in a few seasons. One of the things we would look at is having a delayed effective date in our rule. Shot effectiveness, self-reported, our HIP reporting. Crippling rates of waterfowl in 2012 were the lowest since the 50s. In a Texas study, after more than 5,000 shots fired, there's been no difference in harvest efficiencies between lead and steel, regardless of distance. And Mr. Chairman, those are just some of the facts I wanted to put on the table before we started the discussion.
Okay, very good. Questions for the DNR? Representative Van Zyl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, ordinarily, any product development that involves commodities like steel and copper and nickel and things of that nature, you know, we tend to warm up to, but too many of our colleagues won't allow us to extract any of those minerals, so I guess that argument goes out the door.
Representative Metzler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would this be, in your mind, I see this as potentially having some worry out there for folks who would worry about a permanent ban on lead ammunition for other types of hunting. Would you see the DNR getting to that phase during the rulemaking process, or would there be some comfort language for folks like that that the DNR might be willing to work on to state that that would not be the intent?
Mr. Chairman, Mark. Representative Metzler, thank you for that question. Most definitely we are not looking at any kind of lead ammunition ban at all. We're certainly that the focus of this rule is looking at the deposition of lead shot on wildlife management areas. There's been other language, I think there's some language at the federal level that would prohibit other agencies at the federal level from banning federal or lead bullets or lead shot, not lead shot, but lead bullets, deer hunting ammunition, things like that, 22 ammunition. There's no alternative for 22 ammo, right? So we fully recognize that. It's not our intent to deal with any of those other bullet-related issues. Totally focus on the lead shot. And we could have a discussion about if there were to be some language developed to prohibit the DNR from rules making banning lead bullets. So thank you for that question.
Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I distributed a material safety data sheet for lead. We've been getting some emails that characterize the concern about lead as junk science. And it's certainly not junk science that lead is toxic. It accumulates in the body, whether we're talking about our bodies or bird bodies or anything else. It will never break down in the environment because the hazard is in the element. And so it doesn't matter how long it sits there, it will still be a hazard as long as it's there. The issue really with lead is whether it's going to move through the environment. You know, if it's taken up by the birds, that of course is one way that it moves into the become a hazard to animals. There are other ways it can move through the environment and become a hazard for people. In particular, we're talking about the agricultural end of the state, and what the reason I distributed the MSDS. If you look on the third page, there's section 9, physical and chemical properties, and there's a note about solubility in water, and it says it's slightly soluble in water in the presence of nitrates, ammonium, and carbon dioxide. And this is the end of the state where we've certainly got nitrates in the environment. And don't be fooled by the slightly in front of slightly soluble. That's because of the cumulative nature of lead. If it can dissolve at all and it gets in there and it's in the water, it becomes a concern. And the MPCA has shared with me that they do find lead in shallow groundwater. Of course, one of our big sources of that in the past might have been lead acid batteries. They weren't being disposed of properly, but we're doing a better and better job. And lead paint, of course, in the past. So we've gotten the lead paint out of the environment. That was the biggest source of exposure for people. We're getting the lead batteries out of the environment by recycling them. But ammunition is diverting part of that recycling stream. As you mentioned, you're not talking about the bullets, you know, and best case scenario, you fire a bullet, you hit something with it. But even the best hunter, when you're shooting shot, some of that shot's going to end up on the ground. And it's going to stay there until it goes somewhere else. So the immediate concern with the DNR is the birds. My concern long term is our groundwater and our drinking water protection in this area. Thank you.
Representative Enzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, in relation to my previous rather tongue-in-cheek comment, it's now come to our attention on this side of the table here that all of the steel shot sold in the United States is made in China. So there goes that argument. The other question that I had is, Mr. Meyer, can we get you on the record saying this has nothing to do with shotgun slugs?
Commissioner Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anzalez, we're certainly looking at just the shot issue. I believe slugs and like muzzle loader slugs wouldn't be addressed by our rule.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, we are specifically talking about fine shot, not slugs. My name for the record, Bob Welsh. I'm the operations manager in Section Wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Mr. Meyer, I personally have switched over to copper-clad bullets for deer hunting through the urging of my son, but that's a personal choice. Rather than this proposal rulemaking from the DNR, have you considered a hunter education program to try to get people voluntarily to come into this? Because the reason I ask is, although my son is probably greener than me, he's not a hardcore environmentalist, but he sees the benefits to this in the long run. And if we did a hunter education program instead, and then possibly move this rulemaking further down the road, there might be a better response, because currently my emails have been about 100-1 in favor of this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that has been an important part of our hunter education. We have been doing studies and pushing the benefits of the alternative non-toxic ammunition for a number of years, including copper, as Mr. Representative indicated. And I guess we don't see this as an either or. We see this as a both.
Members, we've got 17 folks in the audience that want to speak to the issue, for and against. Any other comments for the... Oh, Representative.
Yeah, just a quick one. Thank you, Mr. Sure. Chair. I got a bunch of emails myself and appreciate everyone reaching out on it. However, I did make time to talk to my friends who hunt all over the state up north. We got a hold of about 25 to 30 of them before the committee hearing here. Through a phone chain last night, and I think maybe the approach here has been the hard part. I think a lot of people are under the impression that this applies to all public lands, and after doing their research on it, it is out of our region, so they weren't as concerned because their hunting is up north for the most part. However, many of my friends enjoy pheasant hunting on some of the properties listed, and just for clearly on the record, it's WMA properties only, correct?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Myers,
it will be WMA properties in the farm area. It would be south of that line that I showed you on that map. Okay. State-owned wildlife management areas.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, I'm just wondering a little bit where you got your information on the cost of the shotgun shells, because I've been looking at it, and the only steel shot that I can find for that price is at only 10 rounds per box and not 25 rounds per box. I'm just making sure that the information is, it's apples to apples, not apples to oranges.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, those numbers that were represented in the slide were taken right off the Cabela's website, and they were for 25 shots per box. And it seems you can find whatever numbers you want to make your argument for or against, depending on what you selected. The shot that we selected, we tried to our best to compare apples to apples, and what you have in your packets is what we found for comparable shot and premium, comparable steel and premium lead. It was about $1.50 a box.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I wish I could find that because I'm on the Cabela site and it's not there.
Mr. Chairman, we can provide that information for the chair.
Yeah. Anything else, members? We've got a number of people that want to speak to the issue in the audience. I do want to bring to everyone's attention in the audience and on the committee a letter that I sent to Commissioner Landwehr when I heard that this was going to take place through rule. Now, this has been attempted in the past through legislation and failed at the legislature. And this really should be going through the legislature. They couldn't get it passed through the legislature, so now they're trying to do it by rule. And I think that's a little offensive, actually. I think this has to go through the legislature. I wish that the DNR would have brought a bill forward. We would have heard the bill. I don't know what would have happened to it, but legislatures change every election cycle. So, but I sent a letter to the commissioner, and they're moving forward with the with the rule change anyway. So I'm a little disappointed about that. I think that if we don't do something now, if we don't get this passed and have the governor sign it, after we're out of here, the DNR is going to pass this and it's going to become law. So I'm very, very concerned. There's a number of different written testimonies in your packets, members. They're also available for the public in the back for a number of different folks in support. Safari Club International, National Shooting Sports Foundation, St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, the Marshall Area Chamber of Commerce, and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce are all in support of putting a stop to the lead ban. So we're going to bring testimony forward now from the public. Brad Strutman, Marshall Area Chamber of Commerce.
Mr. Chairman, just if I may address your letter really
sure.
quickly, because that is a very valid point, and I appreciate you sending us the letter. That is why we had the open house as soon as we could, March 10th, the beginning of session. It was really soon, but we wanted to make sure people had an opportunity to address us in a public forum. I know many legislators were there, and as we've spoken before, we wanted to make sure that we give the legislature an opportunity to discuss this proposal, and that's exactly what we're doing here today with your bill. So thank you for that opportunity. We appreciate it.
Well, Commissioner Meyer, we wouldn't be here discussing this right now if I hadn't brought this legislation. That's the important factor. I think there was only two legislators that came to the forum that you had over at the DNR building.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brad? We'll go four against, kind of in that order. Thank you for your testimony. Please state your name and who you represent for the record. We're giving everyone 2 minutes.
Yeah.
We've got a number of people to speak, and we've got a number of other bills to do, so try to keep it short, 2 minutes or less.
Well, thank you, Chairman Hackbarth and members of the committee, for this opportunity. As stated, I am Brad Strutman from Marshall, Minnesota. I'm representing the Marshall Area Chamber of Commerce, the Marshall Area Visitors and Convention Bureau, along with 18 other communities and chambers in greater Minnesota, including but not limited to Bemidji, Grand Rapids, Hibbing, Little Falls, Medelia, Redwood Falls, Sleepy Eye, Wilmer, Windham, Worthington, along with Burnsville, and the city of St. Paul. We are united in our opposition to the proposed lead ban on WMA land. We represent a diverse range of large cities and small towns, but we all agree that this proposed ban would have a negative effect on local economies throughout Minnesota. According to Hunting Works for Minnesota, our state's 500,000 hunters spend an average of $1,500 a year on gear and trip-related expenses. That money supports over 12,400 jobs in our state. Overall, hunters account for $1.3 billion in Minnesota's economy. Many of the smaller towns and cities we represent would see locally owned businesses such as motels, cafes, restaurants closing if hunters started going elsewhere or quit hunting altogether. The people and businesses we represent need hunters. Minnesota needs hunters. Besides the economic contribution, hunters are also responsible for millions of dollars in conservation funding, the Pittman-Robertson Act, an 11% federal excise tax on ammunition and other hunting equipment, is distributed to the state to pay for habitat restoration, which benefits non-game species as much as whitetails and pheasants. Minnesota benefited nearly $25 million in the year prior thanks to hunting and shooting sports. Nothing happens in a vacuum. This ban could have much broader consequences than what we are initially reviewing. By the DNR's own admission, public reception of this proposed ban has been mixed. It's our fear that this opposition could turn into frustration, then anger, and then the potential rejection of the sport and related activities. Hunting that would hurt hunting retention of older hunters and the recruitment of new hunters and shooters. Again, I thank you for the time you've granted us, and I wish wisdom in your decision.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Les Bench.
Les Bench, I'll disperse with introductions. You know me.
We know who you are.
All right. Just a brief background. We've worked with our friends with the NRA and our friends with GOCRA in the past, and anytime there's a Second Amendment element in the board, I will put my butt on the line to protect it anytime, anywhere, any place. But this has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. I'm going to cover four items: science, cost, effectiveness, and the right. The science is here. The science is clear. Read. If you Google lead toxicity in the environment, you'll come up with about 15 million hits. Read the first 100 of them. If it doesn't convince you, then read the second 100 and keep reading. The science is here. Lead is toxic. It is poisonous. It will not go out of the environment. Our club has been lead-free for 22 years. It was a good choice to make, and I think it's a good choice to, that we will continue doing it. The cost. Federal has not stepped up to the plate. I don't know if my good friend Ryan Bronson's in the audience or not, but I'll speak to him. When 2006, Senator Satvir Chaudhry introduced the bill, I was in that his office. Ryan Bronson was in there with Darren Goins from the NRA, and I asked Ryan, why aren't we doing steel? He said, because it's too expensive. We have to buy it from China. That's an insult. That's an insult to the people of Minnesota. Now, as a result, there's a company called Rio. It's an Italian company. They're having a plant. I made the mistake at the DNR expose to say that it was Marshall, Minnesota. It's Marshall, Texas. They're building strictly steel shot. The 2 3/4, 1/8, 1 1/8 ounce, $8 a box. The 7 7/2, $5.50 a box.
Time's up. But
one other thing, the right to choose.
Yep, wrap up.
It's, you have the right to choose, but you do not have the right. We as hunters have to take the responsibility for the future environment, and we do not have the right to pollute the environment. Take the responsibility and do this properly. Thank you, committee.
Thank you. Rick Horton. State your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Rick Horton. I am the regional biologist for the National Wild Turkey Federation, speaking on behalf of the 9,000 members of the NWTF here in Minnesota. You'll hear a lot of things about the cost and about recruitment. I think that those are issues, but they can be overcome. Our primary issue here is with the science behind this, and not the science of the lead, but actually the science about the impacts to wildlife populations. We feel that the agency has not done a good job of showing that upland hunters are contributing lead to the environment in a manner in which it's being taken up and causing population-level impacts to wildlife. And that's key. You will hear people talk about individual animals dying. That's unfortunate, but individual animals get hit by cars, die in any manner of different ways, and the agency does not manage for individual animals. They manage populations, and they are a member of the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, which has a resolution on this that specifically states that state agencies should focus on populations and should focus on good science. There are no wildlife populations being negatively impacted by shot from upland hunters. If a turkey hunter is out in the woods, shoots a turkey, there's a little bit of lead distributed, sure, but it's not killing a bunch of animals. So this broad brush approach we don't feel is appropriate. I applaud Mr. Bench for going lead free on his property. It's a small property and they shoot a lot on that property, and there are cases where a lot of lead gets distributed and can have impacts on populations in that area, but that's not the case on our WMAs. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for keeping it short. Colette Atkins. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. My name is Colette Adkins. I'm an attorney and a biologist with the Center for Biological Diversity. We're a national nonprofit organization focused on endangered species protection, and I work at our Minnesota office. And I'm here representing our thousands of Minnesota members, asking that you not push forward this legislation that would prohibit the DNR from making its science-based decision to restrict lead in this very reasonable way. The Minnesota DNR is the expert wildlife agency here. They've done much due process in terms of public comments, public hearings. I think they are the right ones to make this decision. We've got a situation here. We've gotten lead out of our gas. We've gotten lead out of children's toys. We've gotten lead out of paint. We need to get lead out of our environment, and putting lead shot into the environment is one way that's contributing over time to a degradation of our environment And that's certainly something that the DNR has expertise in, and I think you should allow them to do their job. My organization, although it has thousands of members, we have not yet mobilized them on this issue. This came up very quickly for us, but please do be assured that you will be receiving emails from our members in the next few weeks because we care very much about this issue. Thank you very much, and I have a copy of my written testimony in the back.
Very good. Thank you very much. Jessica Vandenberg, Safari Club. Thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Jessica Vandenberg, and I'm on the board of the Minnesota chapter of Safari Club International, and I'm here to testify on behalf of Minnesota SCI and in our support of House File 3209. The issue today isn't about whether lead is toxic or the science behind that issue. The issue is that the proposed DNR rule is based upon incidence of mortality instead of scientific evidence of a population-level impact. You've heard that before. If swan, eagle, and other bird populations are thriving in Minnesota, despite the historic and current use of traditional ammunition, why is the DNR proposing this ban? The unintended consequences of such a ban are twofold. Certain Minnesotans will be priced out of hunting because of the increased cost of ammo. Minnesota has a hunting heritage that crosses ethnicity, age, sex, and political party. Hunting brings people together, but with a ban on more affordable ammunition, hunting will no longer bring together Minnesotans of all backgrounds. Instead, it will only bring together Minnesotans that can afford it. Only those that can afford it can take advantage of the WMA crown jewels. It's critical to understand that less hunters means less revenue generated from the sale of hunting licenses and ammunition sales. Less revenue means the Game and Fish Fund has reduced revenues. If it's reduced, DNR programs are going to be facing having cuts or reduced programs. And I think it's clear from all sides that are here today that we don't want that to happen, and we respect our partners in the DNR and generally want to see the good work that they do carry on. Also, if programs aren't cut, it forces the legislature to have to tap into the general fund to make up for the difference in lost revenue. Minnesota SCI is unconvinced that this is not a backdoor attack by out-of-state hunting groups on Minnesota's constitutional right to hunt, especially when we see here today the same anti-hunting groups that sued the state of Minnesota to stop the wolf hunt. The Center for Biological Diversity is testifying before this committee in support of the ban. Without a bill stopping further restrictions, this DNR rule will be the tip of the iceberg and a first step in a well-funded out-of-state effort to ban the use of all affordable ammunition.
Ms. Vandenberg, time is up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Dan Arnosti. Isaac Walton Lee. Dan here? Okay. Tim Spreck. Welcome to the committees.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Tim Spreck. I'm here today on behalf of and speaking for the Minnesota Weapons Collectors Association. Mr. Chair, anytime government initiates an unwarranted and incremental encroachment upon our rights, we have to step up, and we have to step up in a big way, and we have to stand together. I use the word unwarranted because the science doesn't back this, as you've heard. There's no reason why we shouldn't be able to continue shooting lead shot. Incremental, even though the DNR has told you today that this is not a first step, we know that things can change down the line. If the first step is established and the foundation is built, when the good folks that testified before you today from DNR are retired and hunting and fishing up north somewhere and the next wave comes in, they build upon, or they have the ability to build upon, this foundation. We're not happy about this, and we'd like to see this bill be forwarded. The Minnesota Weapons Collectors not only represent people that hunt, they also represent people that like to shoot vintage firearms. As you know, conversions are expensive, and they damage these firearms. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, I encourage you to pass this bill through and send it down the line. It's the best move, and it's the smartest move for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and thanks for keeping it short. Dan Arnosti, you were up earlier, and we skipped over you. Are you prepared now? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Arnosti. I represent the Isaac Walton League. I hope that you have in your package a letter from our past national president, Dave Zentner. The Isaac Walton League is a pro-hunting organization that has many conservationists who are avid sportsmen. We are strongly in favor of DNR proceeding with the rules as required. And as Mr. Zentner expressed in his letter, if you'll take the time to take a look at it, we believe it's a matter of good conservation ethics. It is clear that lead is a deadly substance and is fatal to many non-target individuals of a variety of species of wildlife. And we believe, as good conservationists, as most sportsmen are, that it is inherent to be conservative with our wildlife. To take a step like this, which serves to bolster and maintain populations of non-target species, wildlife that's not intended to be harvested, and we believe that this is a good conservative step that the DNR is doing, and urge the legislature not to pass this legislation and not to interfere with the rulemaking. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Yep.
Thank you for keeping it short. Jim Rauscher. Joel Sporting Goods? Jim Rauscher? Okay, we'll move on. Kristen Hall? Maybe I'm saying that name wrong. Jim Rauscher? Jim Rauscher? Not here? Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you. My name is Kristen Hall, and I'm with Audubon, Minnesota. Our organization's goal is to reduce threats and improve habitat for birds. I'm here to first remind everyone that the DNR section of wildlife carries out research and management programs affecting all state wildlife species. These programs are carried out by regional and area professionals. The section acquires, develops, and manages wildlife management areas, most of which are in public hunting, open to public hunting during established seasons. The section also recommends hunting and other wildlife-related regulations and carries out census, survey, and research projects promoting wildlife habitat protection and development of public lands and promoting wildlife habitat protection on public and private lands. And I believe that stripping the DNR of the rulemaking capabilities on restricting the use of lead in public hunting is irresponsible and erodes the mission and purpose of that entire agency. The DNR has done and will continue to do their due diligence in the proposed rule change for requiring non-toxic shot in WMAs within the farmland zone. And one important part that I'd like to remind everyone of is that they have done the public hearings, they are receiving majority of support to reduce lead in our environment, and that wildlife management areas, when they were originally established in this state, were part of a program called Save the Wetlands. This rulemaking change is actually very much in line with the federal rulemaking change to get lead shot out of wetlands through waterfowl hunting, and everyone has made that adjustment, and wildlife has benefited for it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping it short. Pat Watson. Pat Watson? Pat O'Boyle.
Also have my grandson with me.
Good, right? That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You have 2 minutes, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Name's Pat O'Boyle, and I represent myself.
Excellent.
As a hunter.
You have 2 minutes.
I'm Max Rabideau, and I also represent myself.
I am in favor of this ban. I want to state that clearly. I started hunting when I was 9 years old, duck hunting. Okay? I'll turn 70 in a few months. So I've been around doing this for quite a while. Had you asked me or had this occurred years ago, I would have been opposed to it. A lot of things have changed as I see things differently in my life, and I'm going to skip a lot of that in the interest of the 2 minutes. One thing I want to point out is the DNR, in their presentation, referenced Hunters use, on average, approximately 2 boxes of shells. No one's opposed that. I have no clue. I'm assuming they've done some sort of survey. What I want to point out on that, because I sat down and did the math, 2 boxes of shells. Average hunting loads 1 1/8 oz, number 6 shot. I think they talked about that. One shell, 280 pellets. Pull the chart right off the web. One box, 7,000 pellets. 2 boxes, what they're talking about. That's 4 pounds of lead, 14,000 pellets, okay, from one hunter. So I did another thing this morning. I went out on the web and I looked at the DNR's website. How many hunters hunt pheasants? From 2014, the stat is 57,590. So I went, well, how many of them use the WMAs? I didn't have time to ask, so I did a ballpark. I said, how about 10,000? Okay, that's 18%. If 10,000 use the WMAs, that's 20,000 boxes of shells. Put this in perspective. That's 40,000 pounds of lead every year going out there. You want to guess how many pellets? Try 140 million, okay, going out there. Because when I sat and did this, talked about it, I was opposed to it, but I thought, well, hunters go out and shoot a few shots. When you put it in that perspective, we're not talking about something trivial. People keep talking about the DNR doesn't have scientific study. I want to give you a comparison. Well,
Mr. O'Boyle, your 2 minutes is up.
Okay, thank you.
You want to wrap it up? You have it.
I will. Okay. The thing I'm saying is we're talking about birds of rapture. Who can relate to an eagle? Well, it's beautiful up in the sky. I'm sorry, but most of these, when I look at them up close, I think they're butt ugly. We can't relate to them. If we were talking about little dogs being poisoned, you wouldn't be having this meeting. Because you'd have people lined up for blocks holding their little dogs saying, what you are doing, hunters, is poisoning them. We can't relate to, and I think that's part of it.
Thank you for your testimony. Jeff Dahlberg.
Okay. Excuse me. Does Max get any time?
Okay. I thought, did he sign up separate? Or?
He did. Okay. I signed him up.
I didn't have him on the list. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you.
I'm in favor of the ban because I think that it'll decrease the waterfowl population and pheasant population in Minnesota. And then hunters will stop coming to Minnesota and start going to states with a higher population. And that will actually decrease the number of hunters in Minnesota, which will decrease the revenue that Minnesota gets from it way further than the amount of revenue Minnesota loses from hunters leaving the sport of hunting from because of switching to steel shot.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Jeff Dahlberg. Jeff Dahlberg is not here? Okay. Max, we did have you on the list. It was further down the list. I apologize. Thank you. Nels Paulson? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hackbarth and fellow representatives. My name is Nels Paulson, and thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm here in a professional capacity representing Conservation Minnesota, but I'm also here in a personal capacity as an avid hunter. I have two concerns about the proposed bill. First, I think the issue merits review by the DNR, and this bill would essentially prevent any further agency review. And second, on a more personal level, there's no safe level of lead in humans, especially in children, and I worry this bill will allow for continued lead exposure. I almost always process my own game, and anyone who has ever processed game knows that bullet fragments and BBs can be found in unexpected places. I switched to lead-free ammunition because I wanted to make sure that my family and I were not exposed to lead in the game we eat. While I can control the ammunition that I use, I have no influence on the type of ammunition other hunters use. I don't want to harvest birds on public lands who have ingested spent lead shot from other hunters. The lead can persist in the digestive systems of those birds and then in the bloodstream of those animals. I want Minnesota to maintain a strong conservation ethic, and I want to minimize lead exposure for all Minnesotans. For those reasons, I ask you to reconsider the merits of this bill. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Sure, Representative Enzo.
May I ask a question?
Sure, quickly.
Sir, have you ever in field dressing a bird or dressing a bird at home come across BBs, lead BBs, in the crop of a ruffed grouse or in the digestive system of a pheasant or a duck? Ever?
Mr. Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I don't mean to say that I'm eating or even inspecting the digestive system. I would process a bird just like you would expect, you know, mostly for the breast meat. And in fact, I have accidentally found a BB. I'm not sure if it's happened to you, but as you're chewing or something, and you notice there's something hard. And
Mr. Chair, through the witness, but finding a BB in the breast of a bird is quite a bit different from finding BBs that have been ingested by the bird previous to your shooting them.
Ms. Paulson?
Mr. Chair, I agree. And I was referencing the DNR had previously showed a slide about the number of pellets that a pheasant might ingest. And just the presence of lead in that bird is something that concerns me.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Let's see. Next, Kevin Vick. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives. My name is Kevin Vick. I'm a volunteer with Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus and the Minnesota Gun Owners Political Action Committee, and I'm here testifying on their behalf today. We are very supportive of this bill. Since becoming aware a few months ago of the proposed ban on lead shot by the DNR, we have mobilized our own supporters to provide a number, hundreds and hundreds of comments in opposition to the proposed rule by the DNR. Last week, we attended the public forum held by the DNR, and it became very clear to us that the agenda is an incremental ban of all lead ammunition over the course of time. Given the minimal impact that this has at this point, it leaves you with no other choice but to understand that. I found it interesting that ammunition is not considered related to a Second Amendment cause. That's like saying that gasoline is not related to a lawnmower. So it is a Second Amendment issue as well. When it comes to the costs involved, doing this is going to increase the burden on hunters for the costs. The steel that's being talked about in this $12.99 shot is suitable for trap shooting. It is not suitable for bird hunting. So there's sleight of hand and mixing and matching of facts to try and push this agenda. The fact is, shot is $14.99 a box as opposed, not $9.99 a box. The fact is, when it comes to science, is there are no facts that show that this has had a population impact. It's really that simple. Increasing the costs not only for the hunters will also impact business owners that support hunting in the state of Minnesota, both in the revenues that they generate for themselves as well as the taxes that they pay into our system that go back into wildlife preservation. So it's extremely impactful in that regard. In closing, I would appreciate if a member would ask for a roll call vote.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Jerry Petrolli. Thank you very much for coming forward, and please state your name. Hold it. Representative Enzo.
Is it your intention to ask for a roll call?
I was not intending to call for a roll call.
I'll call for a roll call.
Very good. A roll call has been requested. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is Jerry Bretoy. I represent myself and hopefully the thousands of Minnesotans, constituents that don't really know anything but lead is hazardous. And I'm for this legislation. I attended the public hearing on March 10th at the DNR building in St. Paul with an open mind and heard convincing presentation, both pro and con, from the attendees. That I did not hear, what I did not hear from the DNR was that they looked at the data with an open mind. It appears to me that they were focused on the bottom line of someone else's research and not how accurate the research was, where exactly the samples were taken, and other pertinent criteria. I heard good, valid questions put forth to the DNR representatives as the criteria of their studies pertaining to certain impacts of the different types of lead sources and how their decision was justified. They responded with far too many answers like, I don't know, I did not look at that aspect, I didn't feel it was necessary to check those facts or figures, we had no reason to conduct our research in that area, etc. I believe the urgency just isn't there to implement this rule or rules like it in a third of our state that has such a tremendous impact on the livelihood and self-determination of so many individuals, with the possibility of data that may not have been properly vetted or may not totally be accurate or even may be biased at a predetermined outcome. If this ban on southern and western Minnesota is crucial, I believe we must use our own resources to acquire research data taken from the areas in Minnesota that will be impacted with such a ban or lead shot. By doing so, I believe we could properly address the real problem areas, not the blanket assumed or perceived problem areas. Thus, we may avoid the eventual enormous impact on our outdoor sportsmen, our merchants, and our recreational users of this land. Thank you.
Thank you. We've got a question, I believe. Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you give us a specific example of what you're talking about and a question that was asked about the research?
A specific example? They would ask, like, where... They got information from South Dakota, and they would say the question probably I can't quote exactly because I'm going from memory here. The question was, well, if you got the information from South Dakota, where in South Dakota? What was the land use? What was the concentration? And where they got their samples and what have you? And quite frankly, the people were there. There was some real valid information that was given on their presentation. But I would assume that the number of questions answered that they couldn't give an answer to was probably far too many, which led me to believe that they didn't really do enough research on their own.
Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's quite common in science that we attempt not to reinvent all of the research that's ever been done by anybody else ever. So what was a specific, you know, did you follow this up with a written request for this data? Because when you ask somebody, you know, if you were to ask me about my own research right here, right now, I wouldn't be able to tell you that without going back and finding the source. So it's very, very easy to make claims about someone else's science in a vague way like this without being able to provide a specific example of a specific case that was inadequately addressed, assumptions that were made, or something like that. And so I would suggest that, for me, this testimony doesn't really hold a lot of water.
I agree what you say has merit, but I do believe that going there, and you should be able to come away with at least opinion of that the people answering the questions were maybe a little bit more knowledgeable than what I come away with.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to have one last call for, let's see, Jim Rauscher. Did Jim Rauscher show? Pat Watson? Jeff Dahlberg? Any of those folks come? Okay, Representative Mesta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's just kind of rubbed me the wrong way that we had a testifier ask us for a roll call vote. I think if they wanted us to do that they could have that conversation privately. I think that it was, they can run for office too, so...
I didn't make any kind of a comment or motion on that at all. Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo that sentiment because it really smacked of you know, I've had an email earlier today or a message of, you know, so-and-so is going to score this vote and all of that. And this is really part of the problem we're having with partisanship, that we have outside groups that attempt to put pressure on our members so that they cannot vote based on their own knowledge, their own opinions, and so on. And that the threat is coming from the outside to tamper with the process.
Andrew Ruffman is the last one on our list. 2 minutes. Please introduce yourself and who you represent for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Andrew Ruffman. I'm the president of Gun Owners Civil Rights Alliance. You've seen us up here for the last 26 years representing Minnesota's vast majority of law-abiding gun owners. We've seen quite an array of proposals this year already. Universal background checks and registration and fees and waiting periods and bans. You know, when we put restrictions and fees and limits on speech, on the First Amendment, we call it a chilling effect, and we take a very, very dim view of it. But we're seeing exactly the same thing done to the Second Amendment. It's part of an all-out assault on the Second Amendment, on shooting, on hunting, on gun ownership. And it might be that each of these things, the proponents of each fee, of each infringement, will say, well, is it really that much of an inconvenience? Well, is this really that much of an inconvenience? Is it that much of a cost? But when you put all these things together, it paints a much different picture. This is the death of a thousand cuts. This is trying to out-fee and to out-hassle gun ownership, hunting, and shooting right out of existence. And for that reason, I applaud this bill, and we recommend its passage.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And thank you for keeping it short. No, no. Keep it quiet. Okay, Representative McNamara.
I just had a question for the testifier.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say I'm a strong proponent of the Second Amendment rights, and I'm disappointed that you're saying this issue is a Second Amendment right. This issue is about the science and lead shot, and I actually am a very strong proponent of what the chairman wants to do, and I don't support DNR banning it. I told the commissioner that myself, but I think you're diluting your issues when you try and say that this is a Second Amendment issue. This is about science and hunting and things like that, and I don't agree with you, and I want to publicly have it stated that I don't agree this is a Second Amendment right, and I hope you don't score it, though I'm going to vote for it, and that'll help my record with you. I don't agree with you that, and I think it was mischaracterized what you're saying it's about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rothman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, we're very appreciative of your strong record of support of the Second Amendment, but I think that the comment about gasoline and lawnmowers is apropos here, and the shooting sports are an important part of the Second Amendment. It's not the whole of the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment isn't about hunting, but anything that adds an additional hurdle, an additional hassle, an additional expense to any part of shooting, we have to take seriously as a threat to the Second Amendment.
Representative McNamara, follow up on that? The other?
Mr. Chair, sometimes it's best to not say anything.
Representative Mesa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, ditto.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, is there a Nancy Christopher? Did I got that right? We'll take a couple of comments from the audience. If people haven't signed up to speak, we have to really limit your time, though.
Yep,
we'll give you a minute.
Very, very quick. Yep. Nancy Christopher, representing myself. I attended a University of Minnesota veterinary lab discussion about 2 weeks ago regarding lead toxicity and what happens. And what they do is they do the autopsies on the animals that are brought in with lead poisoning or that have died. What happens when lead shot hits bone in a bird or an animal is that the shot, it shatters, leaving very, very small fragments that you cannot even see to contaminate the meat. And what happens then is when you eat that meat, you consume that, and lead toxicity has to do with weight times consumption. so your smaller children are impacted the most. It could take a long time for grown man to be impacted. The DNR proposal with respect to proximity to wetlands, very valid with the 10-inch rains that we've had. I don't believe we have a personal right to pollute. And with respect to the appropriateness of dealing with this on a DNR procedural rule versus legislative process, on a point-by-point basis, I agree a legislative process, but I consider this to be something that needs to be done quickly because of the math that was given and the toxicity. It's a public safety issue. The DNR should be allowed to go ahead with this procedure. The legislature can always correct it if they choose to.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'll give 1 minute to anybody else in the audience that might want to come forward quickly. We have a number of bills to get through, and people were supposed to sign up previously, but we'll give public the opportunity to say a few words.
My name is Fred Gercio. I'm a citizen and national advocate. I live in Burnsville, Minnesota. I also am an engineer and in multiple disciplines, so I have a unique perspective on this. First thing I'd like to say is Obama and the EPA legislated out our only smelter, lead smelter in the United States. We don't have a lead smelter anymore, so everything has to come from recycling. I'd also like to say, too, in the southern tier, just changing from shotgun for harvesting deer to rifle would yield about an 80% reduction in the lead used in taking of an animal. I also disagree when birdshot hits an animal. It's very soft. It's malleable, especially in shot. It's not going to break up. I've harvested a lot of animals and looked at their digestive tract to see what they're eating so I know where to hunt, how to hunt. And I've never seen things inside the animal of the that I've harvested. And I've been trapping, hunting, and fishing since the 60s. Also, too, in one of the reports they talked about eagles. Eagles harvest fish. And we've taken lead out of the things, the hooks and lead weights and things that we've used. And that's more of the reason for the reduction in the lead of the eagles. And in that report that she forwarded, she also said bullet fragments. So as others have said, this is the first step. And it is restriction, restriction, restriction.
I gave you 15 seconds over your minute, so
kay.
Please wrap it up.
Lead doesn't break down. We look at what happened in Flint, Michigan. The salts that they use on the road, they changed from the Great Lakes to using river water, and the river water had a lot of runoff. The salt is what broke down the lead and put it into the water. In Minnesota, we're going to have the same problem. I looked down at the Superfund sites, the freeway Superfund sites down sure. next to the Minnesota River.
Thank you. I'm going to have to
cut off. That's full of lead acid batteries and it's pumped into our water supply.
Allotted amount of time. Thank you very much for your
Thank
testimony.
You. I am for your bill and saying we need to protect our industry. The last thing I want to say, too, is we can't get bullets. There's been a shortage of bullets.
We've got a number of other things to do today. Thank you very much for your testimony. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gary Botzik with the Minnesota Conservation Federation, and I'm here to oppose this piece of legislation today. I hate to do that against my favorite chairmans, and I'm getting scored on this myself probably, so that's okay. We have to do the right thing, and our organizations respectfully disagree. If you look at the DNR handout, the requirement is part of the ongoing effort to reduce the amount of lead deposited on public hunting land, particularly wetlands, many of these parcels, and we've worked hard, you all have, on acquiring management areas. That's our hunting background in Minnesota. The best WMAs in Minnesota are the ones with wetlands. So when we take those shots, whether it's at a pheasant or a duck or a goose, some of that gets in the water. And that's where loons and other birds will ingest that lead shot pellets. And that's where the problems get in their gizzards and trouble. When I worked for the Minnesota Lake Association, we work hard to get the lead out of lead sinkers as well, you know, for loons, our state bird, and we've saved a lot of loons because of that. We oppose this legislation, Mr. Chairman, and urge you to reconsider it and let DNR do a pilot on 33% of the WMAs, and let's see where it takes us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Any additional comments from members? No. Otherwise, I'm going to take the vote, and we'll move on. I'm sorry, President Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 30 years ago, the swans on the Thames River in England started dying, and it was directly from lead poisoning that they were getting at the bottom of the river after centuries of fishing with lead weights and things. Lead paint is banned, and I dare say there's not a person in here that would drink a glass of water from Flint, Michigan. It's dangerous stuff, and if you keep piling it on, and the last testifier was talking about the water runoff, well, that's where the lead's going to get into the water. And I'm opposed to the bill, and I will vote against it.
Anyone else? Any other further discussion? Okay, the chair will renew his motion that House File 30. Quickly, please. Ready to move on.
Mitch Abramson, St. Paul, thank you for allowing me to speak. And just a quick thing, slippery slope. We've seen it for the last 50 years. We were told you can keep your doctor, and now pretty soon communists or left-wing fascists like we have here will be saying, based on your political position, are you even going to get a cancer treatment? As we go further down
Mr.
this...
Mr. Chair, I resent the name-calling, and I would like to have this stop.
Okay. Oh, left-wing fascists? Have you seen the Trump rallies?
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Enjoy yourself.
I do.
Okay, we're going to move on and take the vote. If there's any other discussion amongst members, I'm going to make the motion that House File 3209 be passed and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Election Policy. A roll call has been requested. The chair votes aye.
Representative Lewick?
Aye.
Representative Anzels?
Aye.
Representative Considine?
No.
Representative Cornish?
Aye.
Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Representative Hertas?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Keel?
Aye.
Representative McNamara?
Aye.
Representative Moline?
No.
Representative Metza?
Aye.
Representative Yaruso?
No.
Representative Lucero?
Aye.
Skip right over you.
Okay, there being 11 ayes and 3 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is moved to government operations. Thank you very much. Representative Schumacher, you are here now. Good. Please come forward. The chair will move House File 3135. Let's see. We're going to hear the bill and lay it over for possible inclusion in the Game of Fish bill. We're gonna pass the bill to the General Register. If that's okay with you, Representative Schumacher.
All right.
I think what we'll do is probably send it to the General Register and probably also include it in the Game and Fish bill, should we decide to have one.
So it's good to have options, Mr. Chair.
Exactly. Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3153 is the result of a town hall meeting that I had in my district last December with area hunters, Chair Hackbarth, and DNR representatives. Many of the questions that were brought up during the discussion that night included clarification on how rules were applied to hunting and what input hunters actually had in the decision-making process. This bill would specify that deer hunters are part of the annual satisfaction survey, would help to ensure that deer hunters have a role in the DNR's work and their plans, and give the DNR better information for deer hunting season. With that, I would like to invite Craig Inger, the Executive Director of the Deer Hunters Association, to offer some background.
Very good. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Craig Engwall, Executive Director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. And we think the Deer Hunter Survey would be very helpful. It'd be good data for DNR, just informative in general, but given that deer hunters in Minnesota, 500,000 strong, have had some concerns about their voices being heard in the DNR processes that have gone on, this would be another way to capture that opinion of Minnesota's deer hunters. And with that, I'd take any questions.
Very good. Any questions, members? Okay. Any further testimony? Okay, the chair renews his motion that House File 3135 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, next on the agenda. What do we have here? 3206? Okay. House File 30, the chair will move House File 3206. We have to send this one to represent McNamara's committee, the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance Committee. Commissioner Meyer. Not here. Corey Bennett. Oh, there he is. Welcome again to the committee, Commissioner.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, I'm assuming we're working on your
5206.
Yep. Just
comments?
We do have some comments, Mr. Chairman. This came about back in, I think, 2012 when we were working on the wolf hunting season. We've been generating approximately off of the 50 cents that we estimate about $300,000 of revenue that goes into the wolf management account. Those dollars are used for survey work. So we've done three surveys. We're going to be doing another survey, wolf population estimate in the winter of 2015-2016. Have that information available. The wolf population is some people will laugh when I say this, stable. I know Representative Anzalez will probably say there's more wolves now than ever before, but the wolf population is come back and we feel very healthy. We use these funds, so between the survey work and then the past 3 years, we've been funding a cooperative agreement with APHIS, or USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, Animal Plan, Hanimal, the folks up in Grand Rapids who do the trapping. When we have a complaint, we'll be announcing here shortly that we're moving into another co-management, co-funded agreement with them for $100,000 apiece for this year. The problem we have is that there is a balance in the account. At some point in time, if we do not have a wolf season, we will not have predicted to go in the red in FY19. So we do have some funding available still in the account to fund these works, but the question is, why should the state be paying for the management of a federally protected species? That's a fundamental question I know we all have. So we do not have a formal position on this bill. We understand the need. I guess just to clarify that the price wouldn't go down of the license. The money would just go back into the Game and Fish Fund. So that's with that intention. We'll just have to have discussions in future years on how to manage our wolf population if we do not have a season that we can get license and registrations and application dollars for.
Well, Commissioner Meyer, it's definitely going to be a problem that we'll have to address.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Mr. Engwall.
Mr. Chair, members, Craig Engwall again from Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. We support the bill in that the 50-cent provision was added at a time of budget deficits, the initiation of a wolf management program. It was our understanding that it was temporary. Now that we haven't had a season, it's accumulated some revenue in the fund, and we think it'd be appropriate to have this bill pass, and the wolf management program can be self-sufficient. We'll figure out the way to get there.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Any other discussion to the bill on the committee members? Anyone else in the audience want to speak to the bill? The chair would renew his motion that House File 3206 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. 3206 is passed to the Environment Finance Committee. Next on the list, we already did the Schumacher one. We'll do House File 3174 next. The chair will move House File 3174. And let's see, who do we have to comment on this one? Colonel Rodman. The chair will move House File 3174, be recommended pass, and be referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources.
You got a different outfit on today.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be going to an event later tonight,
all right.
A Moha event, so I hope we'll see you all there also. So I didn't want to do the quick change. Mr. Chair, just a couple comments on House File 3174 and some background for those that may not know. Recently, the department has transitioned ATV safety training and snowmobile safety training to an online format that
we believe provides a much more convenient opportunity for students to take the classes where the parents don't have to drive them to a class. It's coming in line with how kids learn today. They learn through computers. With that, the online class has a fee that is a little bit more. It goes to the private vendor, but we've not heard a lot of complaints about that. We've been working with the ATV Association and the Snowmobile Association, Representative Hackbarth, Chair Hackbarth and others. We have been able to get some group pricing with those online vendors, and we're still continuing to work on lowering the overall cost. So with that said, we do have a reduction in the amount of money we need to spend on materials for those classes, and we have been working through those numbers, and we're getting close to some hard numbers that we'll be working with the ATV Association of Minnesota and the Minnesota Snowmobile MUSA to look at lowering those fees. So we still will have some costs, and we do need to recover some of those costs moving forward, but I think talking with MinUSA and ATVAM here today, we're continuing looking at work moving forward and working on this together as we move forward, and of course the author. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Members, I just want to speak to this a little bit. I have been involved in this. I've been intimately involved with ATV instruction, youth safety instruction, and it's a snowmobile issue, it's an ATV issue. Here's the deal. We need to get youth trained on ATVs and snowmobiles so there's not accidents happening out there. They need the training. And the proof is in the pudding, if you will. We've had this training ongoing. Before we had the training, we had accidents everywhere. Now that has been drastically reduced. Now what's happened is we had the DNR had a good program going. They had this disc that you had to put in your computer to take the disc course on your computer. Now what they've done, and I understand that the discs are going away and it's all about online. So now what happened is the DNR was looking for vendors to take this over and do an online course, but it's gotten very expensive, very expensive. And when we had our first meeting, Colonel Smith, the original one we first started talking about was very expensive per student. And would you care to say exactly what that was? It was over $20. It was a $30. $30, I believe, was the original.
Mr. Chair, it was $29.95.
There you go, $30. If you have more than one student, and I'm an ATV instructor myself, you have more than one student, you have 2-3 kids that are going to be taking this course. That's a lot of money. So all of a sudden now you don't have kids taking the test anymore because it's too expensive. You know, before it was $10 to take the test, and we were done. Now it's going to be $30 times 3 or 4, however many kids you're having to take the class. This is ridiculous. So we asked folks to try to come up with a better solution, and we've been working through this. There's been a couple of other ideas, but it's still not getting the price down. So that's why this legislation is here. So that's my rant on the issue. So Mr. Franzen, you might want to add some comments or your perspective from MinUSA.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Doug Franzen, representing the Minnesota United Snowmobiler Association. I will be brief because the chairman took a good part of my presentation. And this is, our goal is to have 100% compliance with the law, which means universal snowmobile training. There's two ways. We have classroom instruction for the kids and the electronic learning, and adults generally almost exclusively just do electronic. Our history is we have hands-on snowmobile training, and for many of you who have been on the snowmobile, you know the benefits of hands-on training. We have hundreds of volunteers who with no compensation train these kids. The online, the CD was a good supplement to that. It helped the teaching. DNR materials, other materials were very helpful. And now the online has that same promise. The difficulty, again, is right now the vendor will charge $30 per child. If you're a family with four kids that you want to ride snowmobiles, you get a lot of money. And for a lot of folks, $30 just for one kid's a lot of money. after a lot of negotiation with the vendor, at the strong urging of the DNR, by the way, when the DNR was doing this, they came up with a group discount that for $10, you know, parents could have their kids, and they would also extend that. So a ATV or snowmobile instructor in the program teaching could get the kids online for $10 each instead of $30 each. We thought that was a great deal. Unfortunately, we were informed by DNR enforcement, one of Colonel Smith's officers, that broke the law. Because, and unfortunately, the officer was correct, because at that time, what we could charge for the online and the training, if it went through the class, would be a total of $5. So, the vast majority of our snowmobile clubs don't even charge $5. It's a free. Sometimes they may want to have snacks or a lunch, or they may have a room rental that may necessitate a charge, but generally it's free training. What this bill does simply is it says we can charge up to $10 plus the cost of the online training, which we can get through the vendor with the agreement with DNR for $10. So a parent's faced with spending $10 rather than $30. If this bill does not pass, the parents will have to pay up to $10 for the hands-on class plus the $29.95 to this Texas vendor. That's bad public policy, Mr. Chairman. I think your bill deals with that. As Colonel Rodman said, we're continuing to talk on what DNR would need for what materials they had. By outsourcing the training as opposed to the online training and going online as opposed to doing it internally, they've saved a lot of money. DNR's trying to get its arms around exactly what expenses remain. We and our friends from the ATV community will be assisting them in making that determination. DNR door is always open to us, and I want to talk nice to the DNR for just a second. They do talk to us. We do go over their offices a lot. We do point out the errors of their ways quite frequently, but they are a good partner, and they're an essential partner in this safety training. We strongly support this legislation and urge that the members do the same.
Very good. Questions, member? Representative Mensah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Texas is doing our snowmobile renewal licensing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mensah, yeah. I believe it's a national company. There are actually two vendors, and I think you have a choice of a Michigan company too. But that's really the academic portion. If there's a stop sign, it looks like this, and you're supposed to stop. And I'm dumbing it down for purposes of illustration. And that's why our belief is strong that that's a wonderful supplement to the hands-on training our Minnesota instructors, our volunteers give them. Because it's one thing to read online what happens when you squeeze your thumb on that throttle. It's a different thing to be on the snowmobile and see what exactly happens. We strongly urge that the online be a supplement for the kids to the hands-on.
Mr. Chairman, just if I may real quickly.
Commissioner.
Bob Meyer, DNR. Are we talking the safety training or the registration of the machines, Representative Mensah?
Mr. Chair,
you're asking about the training.
I guess the training, but overall, I hope we can look for more local.
That's where my comments come in, because we are in the process of having discussions that we'll be talking with you all on our next generation of licensing and registration system, which we're hopeful can be in Minnesota and can have a call center located in Minnesota. So just to put that on the record for people. So.
Mr. Chairman, one final supplement to my comment that
we've got two more bills to do.
Last time I was snowmobiling, Mr. Chairman, you may recall this, I did feel like I was snowmobiling in Texas. I have now become an expert in grass drags.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could it testify? I'm don't know the answer to this. Could you tell me what a brand new snowmobile costs?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm a lawyer, so I'll give you a lawyer's answer. It depends. Generally, they range from $6,000 to $12,000. Some are more expensive, some are less expensive, but that's the general range.
You're paying $10,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bone, you have a comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm Ray Bone. I represent the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, and we have some concerns. One of the things that we were really concerned about when we started this program, and Representative Hackbarth and the All-Terrain Vehicle Association were very instrumental in starting this youth safety and environmental program, was to keep the price at a level where we're sure the kids could afford to take it. And we always thought that level was around $20, and anything over $20 was problematic. And the way things have been structured, and that also includes a pretty hefty subsidy from the account of $150,000 or so a year. But that's also for a model program. Our youth safety program is a model program in the country, and I know that DNR enforcement gets calls all the time from officials in other states wanting to know how we do it and how kids respond to it. So it's an excellent program, and the DNR has worked with us on it. But I think they were a little deaf when it came to our concerns about the cost and how that would affect the lives and safety of these kids that are out there. Because if they can't afford to take it, if their parents can't afford to pay for it, they're not going to. And unfortunately, we believe we've saved a lot of lives, frankly, with this program. And we want to make sure that that continues. We were a little surprised when they initiated the program in the middle of some of the discussions we were having. We thought we were going to be able to conclude those discussions before the program took effect, but evidently there was some miscommunication. But anyway, we hope this bill helps put us back on track so that we can get that down to a level where kids can afford it. What clubs would like to do, and as Doug was saying, what we'd like to do is buy the first one, the first at $29.95, the first program, then we can buy 30 or 40 others at $10. And then when the kids come, or we can, as they sign up, we can give them a number and they can go in and they can take the online training for $10. And we think that's reasonable. And we can live with that. And clubs will either do that for free or they may charge the $10 back, depending upon what kind of resources they have. The ATV clubs, much like the snowmobile clubs, don't usually charge anything for the kids, that additional $10 for incidentals, rent, and stuff like that. They usually eat that themselves as a service. And frankly, I was just looking through the list of ATV courses upcoming. It's amazing the number of courses. And I think in the years that we've done this, it's been close to 16,000-17,000 kids that we've trained. And frankly, we're extremely proud of that and extremely grateful for the cooperation we've gotten both from the DNR and the legislature, because we, again, believe we've saved a lot of lives, to be honest.
And all the hands-on is done by volunteer
instructors. Right.
Okay. Representative Metzger, did you have something? I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3174 be recommended passed and be referred to the Environment Finance and Environment Policy and Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed. Motion prevails. 3174 is sent to Representative McNamara's committee. We're going to do the Blaze Pink Bill real quick. House File 3208. This is, I don't know anybody that might be wanting to comment on this. Maybe Mr. Meyer, I'm not sure. Or Ms. Crunchelli. This is something that the state of Wisconsin has just recently done. Maybe you've seen it in the news. I wanted to get this done last year and get ahead of Wisconsin, but they beat us to it. So, Representative Ms. Cornicelli, go ahead.
For the record, Lou Cornicelli, Wildlife Research Manager, Minnesota DNR.
Oh, I guess I got to move the bill. Chair will move House File 3208 to bring it before us, and we're going to move it to the Government Operations Committee. Please proceed.
Just brief comment on the pink bill. We've been looking. We're just neutral on it. We don't see any. It's not been adopted as a formal standard by the Hunter Education Association, but other states are looking at it. It appears to be just as visible in orange, so we don't have a department opinion on that.
Very good. Thank you very much. I did read a story on this bill. There was a professor, I think at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, that investigated this, and he actually thinks that deer can't see this blazed pink. They can actually see the blazed orange better than they can see blazed pink.
Yep, Mr. Chair, I read the same study. Yep. Deer see more in the blue spectrum, so yep. It may make sense that something that's more red. And, you know, we also have the religious exemptions for red. So
yep.
So I think as you get towards that red spectrum, you're less visible as compared to blue. It's so. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Urusa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has anybody done a study on whether the pink is equally visible to the orange for people that are red-green colorblind?
Mr. Chair, Representative Urusa, I'm not aware of that.
Yeah,
I have a colleague behind me who is red-green colorblind. He may be able to speak to that, but I am not. So, no, there hasn't been much done, I don't think.
I was going to have that professor come today and speak, but he wanted a lot of money. He wanted me to pay for his room. He wanted me to pay for his travel. He wanted me to pay for meals, and I wasn't going to do it. So, Representative Urusa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That maybe somebody has looked at that. That would just be a good thing to look at. You know,
I'm going to try to get that study from him and see if we can actually get it.
Yeah,
and
because that would be one concern, because you're shifting it into a different mix. So, you know, you've got three different colors basically your eye can see, and it's shifting it from the yellow over to the, you know, so it could be a concern.
I will renew my motion that House File 3208 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Most, all opposed? Motion prevails. 3208 is sent to Government Operations. Representative Hansen. Chair will move House File 3406 to bring the bill. I'm sorry. 2406. Did I say 3406? 2406 to bring the bill before us. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 2406 is a fairly simple bill prohibiting the use of unmanned aircraft systems, which is the federal definition for drones, to take or harass or harm wild animals. So I know about a year ago there was quite a bit of discussion in the press about the use of drones with hunting, and the DNR had said that they thought they had indirect language. Since that time, there has been a rapid increase in the number of drones that are sold in the United States, and I think this would be important to have an explicit prohibition. I understand, Mr. Chair, that you have some concerns about it. I'm happy to work with you on it. I do want to just note for the record, with NCSL, the National Conference of State Legislators, New Hampshire had a bill prohibiting the use of UAS for hunting, fishing, and trapping. There was also West Virginia prohibited hunting with the UAS. There have been several others. Michigan, SB 55 prohibited UAS to take game. So we do have some models if we want to continue that conversation. I do believe the Deer Hunters Association is here in support.
Welcome to the committee again. Please state your name and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, members, Craig Engwall, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. And yes, we support the concept of this, and if there's some details that need to be worked out, that's fine, but conceptually we're all on board with it.
Very good. Members, I am on board with this legislation as well. It does have some consequences that are unforeseen here. There's some other remote control aircraft that I think this, the way this is written, is brought into this. There's different flying clubs and airplanes and helicopters and things like that that I think this might cover, and we have to be more specific about not bringing them into the fold. I think there's a number of other issues that we have to look at. This is not going away, though. And I think it's a good thing that we're going to look at this. But I don't want to do something and have unforeseen consequences and affecting some other issues that we don't want to get to. So I think it's an important issue, something that does have to be addressed, and I thank you for bringing it forward. With that, if folks have questions, we'll do that now. But my intent is to lay it over for now, and it's going to be a work in progress.
And
it's not going to go away.
And, Mr. Chair, I'm aware of you know, the federal regulations are rapidly changing,
yep,
and trying to make sure that there's a line between the model aircraft and the drone responsibilities. I know they're struggling with that, and I think it's rapidly evolving both at the federal and other state level, so I'm aware of that and happy to work.
There's a number of very big and important clubs that fly the planes and the helicopters and things other than the drones.
Yep.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I support the legislation, but I just want to share just a quick short story. Last winter or fall during the archery season, we had a wounded deer go into this massive swamp and tried to track it and follow it, and finally ran out of daylight. Came back the next morning and pursued again for more than a half a day, and finally it was determined he couldn't find it. And I reflected on that, and then this holiday season I said to my son, you know, one of those drones would have worked pretty good to be able to find out where that thing was. So maybe considering maybe recovering animals might be a consideration as part of it, but you'd have to, of course, be unarmed and do all of those things.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, just somebody send me some information. Currently now in the hunting handbook, use of walkie-talkie, cell phones, remote control, or other radio equipment, including drones, to take big game or small game is unlawful.
That's in our Minnesota regulation. So it must have, must be some rule now, Colonel Rodman.
Mr. Chair, again, Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, I believe what Representative is referring to is the hunting synopsis. So Minnesota Statute 97B, I believe 085, says that you cannot use a radio equipment to take wild animals. And so that's what the statute currently says, and that's what we based our direction in the hunting synopsis.
Thank you, Colonel Smith. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you. Didn't they clean up one little thing about the remote control for your RoboDuck? I mean, that's radio control device. Didn't they fix that problem?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, there are two exemptions to the remote control or to the radio. One is two-way communication between a dog and a handler, and the wireless remote for a duck decoy.
All right,
with spinning link.
Representative Metha.
Just a comment for a little fun at the end of the day. I'm sure the hunters who can afford the Robo Ducks could probably switch to the Steel Shot too, right?
They're already shooting steel.
Representative Hansen, thank you for bringing this forward. We're going to lay the bill over for possible inclusion and further work. And I hope to work with you on this and come up with a good conclusion to this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Considine, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just can't wait to see Representative Cornish in blaze pink next fall.
Members, there is the Moha banquet tonight. If you weren't aware, I would encourage members and anyone in the audience to participate and go to the Moha banquet tonight. There will be a tribute to Representative Dill. With that, meeting adjourned.